Yeah, I'm Jackson. I have zero experience with carpentry.
I studied at a school for historic preservation in Boston and learned about how things were built, you know, 250 years ago.
There's a long way to go. I'm nowhere near the top. Not that I thought I was, but there's so much more to do out there.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Passion for Craft Podcast. I maybe left enough of a gap there if they want to cut that, but that's fine. We're going to talk about, we just finished lunch, so we're just cleaning our teeth out from poppy seeds. But today we're talking about the lost client a little bit. Maybe we won't even get into that. It's up to you, your discretion. And then
I have lost clients, I think.
Oh, you do.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I think we both do.
But the beta turn away works.
Can I finish? You go ahead. How about you start?
A skill set that I didn't learn fast enough and still not very good at is turning away work, saying no. Mm-hmm. You know, firing your client will sometimes be called firing your client. And I was never very good at that. Still aren't.
Firing your client? What do you mean?
I feel like one of the things someone said, I forgot who, but I always stuck with me is like when you go to a job for initial consultation, estimate, whatever you want to call it, they're interviewing you, you're interviewing them. Mm-hmm. You're trying to see if this is going to be a good move to take on this project. And this episode was kind of my idea because like over the last month, I had one guy that jumps out in particular. he wanted me to do, he was remodeling his house. Upstairs in the nursery, they had wainscoting done just like a month ago by some other carpenter. And he's got this wainscot in there. He wants to trim out the windows. The windows, like an eyebrow arch. He wants to do just focus on this room. I'm like, cool. Sounds like a good job. That's right up my alley. I go there. I meet him. The first thing he says to me is, I pretty much know everything about carpentry. My grandpa was a carpenter. So, like, you know, I pretty much know everything. And, like, immediately I was like, this is not going to work. Like, I mean, I went through with it because I'm there and I'm like, I'll just feel this out. But, like, that was an immediate red flag. Because I've told this other story on the podcast before of the lady from New Zealand who, when she got over here, she was doing a similar thing, remodeling a lot of her stuff. And she said that my tile guy sucks, the painter sucks, like nobody in America knows how to do stuff. I don't know if y'all remember that story.
Yeah.
But I accepted that job and we heard that story back on that podcast. But this guy, he was just putting out all these red flags. Like he said multiple times, like, I know what looks right and what's wrong. And the wainscot that was there, that was done wrong. Already, that he wanted to rip out, it was nice. And I was like, I mean, there's not much more we can do better than this, than whatever this other carpenter did.
Right.
So when I go, I'm thinking like in my mind, when I go and like rip this stuff out and put it back exactly how it was.
Yeah.
Like, this is not going to be good. Like, what's wrong with this?
Right.
You know? It was good stuff. Like, it was just weird. And he walked me around a lot of areas and it was a...
So was it like a pickup job, like where you were just like, I'm fixing the work of another carpenter and this guy was complaining about the last guy kind of deal, or what?
Yeah,
like, how did the job come about?
It was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Which we get that. And then I do go into houses and I see stuff that other people have done.
Right.
And mostly time it's the homeowner that has done it and it's like really jacked up.
It's an awesome accent wall or something really.
Well, it's just like the miters are open and just... You know, not craftsmanship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was like, I mean, the miters on that was as good as the miters on that wall behind him. Mm-hmm. Like, they were good.
Yeah.
That's why I was just like, what's wrong with this? Yeah. You know, it was just.
I think that there's a couple things. Like, one, there are contractors out there who are really good at saying no. And everything that comes out of their mouth can be a negative, you don't want to do that. Whereas I'm not that guy. I would never, you know, tell a client that. So what that means is that I tend to struggle with the other side of that is telling them no, because, you know,
you're bad at telling them no, but you struggle with telling them no.
Did I say that?
I don't know.
Is that the way it came out?
You said it twice.
What I mean is that that grumpy contractor who says you don't want to do that, it has no problem looking at it, no, you're not, no, this is not going to work. You know, and they see a negative. I tend to be an optimist. I tend to be positive. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to say to a client that I walk up to and I realize it's not going to work, say, you know what, this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Because you know, tend to be a pleaser and tend to be, you know, wanting to say, yeah, let's see what we can make it work. Mm-hmm. I have gotten better at reading the clients that are going to be a problem and going, nope. And what I ended up doing is, and that's you know, 30 plus years now doing this, only in the last probably 5 or 10 have I gotten good at that, or gotten better at that. And essentially what I do is I ended up saying, I end up holding stronger to my convictions of like I had a guy who wanted to build this big house and he was really excited about all the money he was going to spend, but it was going to be terrible. And me holding on to, well, you really need to hold on to that historic precedent. If you want that house that you're describing, you're going to need to hold on to the historic precedent, and that's going to cost, you know, this kind of money. And I could see immediately that is not what they wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And that was, wait a minute, you know, who's this guy telling me what, you know? And that's the way I'll kind of push a client away and say, and fire them or something, is just to hold to some of those convictions, as opposed to the old me who would go, yeah, okay, yeah, we can probably make that work. Mm-hmm. Instead of, no, that's not really going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I went through the whole thing with this guy and like, I'm there, I'm going to just finish it out. And you know, I'm taking notes and stuff, but like I said, immediately I'm like, this is just not going to work. So I leave and then I kind of sleep on it and I'm like, yeah, this is, I don't want to do that. Like, it's going to be a bad decision. Mm-hmm. So we had been communicating through text. So I just text him like, hey, you know, it was great meeting with you yesterday. I appreciate the opportunity to look at your project. I think though that your standards are probably like a little bit too high for what I can deliver, and I would not want to upset you. So I would recommend just seeking out another company to work with. I just told him straight up.
Did he reply?
Like that. No, he did not reply.
Because you were kind of being humble, or you know, self-deprecating.
Yeah, I don't necessarily believe that I couldn't deliver to his standards. I just didn't want to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like I didn't want to get involved.
You were basically just at the sacrifice of yourself. You were just saying, "Hey, I'm not gonna."
Yeah.
Instead of just being like, hey man, you seem like you're going to have a problem with whatever work I put out here.
Yes, exactly.
You said, I don't know if I'll be able to deliver to the standard of work that you're expecting.
Which is not a lie.
Right.
But
it's not.
It's not. I don't it's exact, think I'll be. Yeah. But
the standard that he's expecting is unreasonable. You're just avoiding telling him you're being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to tell somebody that you think they're crazy.
Yeah. And then
a lot
I
of people are crazy.
And you also risk the risk of a review, like a bad review. Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy told me I was crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just, I don't know. I always want to be professional.
We had a client that one of the better jobs we've done, they left hating me and wanting to fire me.
Better at quality wise?
Yes. Like the level of preservation that we did on this house was super high.
Nice.
I'd hired a project manager. Well, anyway, before I even get there, I go to meet with this guy, and he's very intense, right? Very strong personality. You know, kind of pacing a little bit, like high energy. Wasn't really sure what he was doing. And so we looked at it, and I kind of just made some comments, and you know, it was an interesting house, and I wanted to do the job. And I remember him coming up to me and giving me a check for $100,000, saying, "Hey, we want to go with you. We're real excited. Hey, what else? Tell me what else you need from me, really quick, too. Like, okay, let's go. We're ready." And I was like, I wasn't ready for that. And then
one of those things where it's like, I haven't said yes to this yet.
I hadn't said yes to this, even though I was interested, but it was just like we didn't have plans, we didn't have a contract, we didn't have anything, and so there was still a bunch of preliminary work that needed to be done, and you know, he's giving me money.
And there's $100,000 on the table,
and you know, you're just like, and it's just like, okay, well, we'll get things started, we'll kind of get things moving, and about 2 weeks later, he gave me another check for $150,000 and said, you know, I don't know what else we need to do here, but this is, we're ready to go. And I said, well, the plans are in process. We got to have something we can show to people. And, you know, I'd given them an original estimate of $500,000 and ended up being $2.5 million.
Yeah.
And he ended up being a guy who was OCD. And if I even suggested something, like he had 1⅜-inch sash, and I said, you know, they were flimsy and they weren't holding up. And I said, well, you know, with your sash, without replacing the frame, we could do 1⅜-inch sash and maybe cut the stop on the inside of their casement window. And he goes, yes, that's what we're doing. So he was like total yes man, but it worked into things like, if the job site wasn't perfectly clean, you know, most of the time he was like, this is terrible in here. And so, you know, now you're kind of always on your toes going like, okay,
what afraid was, of where to step.
Yeah. What's this guy going to
come at? Which most job sites aren't clean, really.
No, yeah. Come at me next. And he ended up having two people from his own company literally sit on the job the whole day with a broom and a thing and just clean things up.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. And so
paid them?
Oh, yeah. And it was just, his attitude was.
Was it a renovation?
Uh huh. It's a restoration.
So he was still living in his house?
No. No one was living there. And his attitude was, you know, if you're not going to keep it clean, then I'm going to have to. You know, you're just like, first of all, you know, would you really accept on my, you know, pay application invoice every week, two guys sitting there working, you know, 20 hours out of the 80 hours that I would need to charge or for a 2 week period,
yep,
you know, just to keep it clean. I mean, it's just, dude, you know, yeah. And so.
Did you ask him that? That'd have been a crazy conversation.
No, I
really expect.
Or just like.
It was more me trying to sit there going, get my head around, okay, this guy's paying those two guys to sit here and clean. I appreciate the cleanliness. I appreciate the attention to detail. I'm sitting there, but in my mind, I'm sitting there going,
it's almost like an insult. Like,
it was.
It's like, you don't think we can keep it clean?
And so it was one of those things where like, wait, should I be doing this for my other clients? Is this what, you know, the people expect when they're working with us? So then you're like, you know, stumbling around doing this kind of stuff. I thought in hindsight that because they were so controlling, and I've done this a couple times before where I've had a difficult client, but they want me on the job. And I say, look, why don't I just consult? You know, why don't I just, I'll lead you to the right subs and I'll help you pay me, you know, 5% or some percentage. But you're equally competent to be able to run this job. You don't need me.
Yeah. That's how I felt with that guy.
Yeah. You don't need me. And so why don't I just help you? I'll help you get, you know, make the right decisions, but you know, you know how to run subs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually worked. And the reason I did that with that second client is because that first client afterwards, as I was doing my autopsy, trying to like, what in the world went wrong with that? You know, that was kind of a strategy of trying to not firing the client, keeping your foot in the door, providing the expertise, but certainly not being the general contractor they're only going to be frustrated with.
Well, you said he ended up hating you. What was that about?
They felt they ended up hiring one of my guys away from me. And
that's shady.
It is. It was bad. And they basically approached him when he was on the job and was basically like, you know, look, why don't you just come to work for us? Well, you know, we've got you employed here for at least another 6 months, and we'll turn you on to our friends, and we'll turn you on to our stuff. And so, you know, they hired away one of my better guys.
Was it the project manager?
No, it was one of the craftsmen who, in hindsight, and had said he'd want to go out on his own anyway.
Okay,
and
cool.
It's fine, but it's...
fine, but it's not fine.
It's not fine.
That's unethical.
Yeah, it was just kind of... I don't know, sleazy a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. that you find a guy, you respect his work, and then I'm going to go hire one of his better guys and just do it myself. I don't really need him.
Yeah.
It's just like, really? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were signs along the way that guy was going to be trouble, but, you know, I'm not very good at firing a client. I'm not very good at, you know, how to say no to them. And so, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit different too, like the pressures on a business of your size versus mine. Like if someone doesn't want to work with me, like I'll be like, all right, fine. Or if I don't want to work with someone, I'm like, right. I don't need it. Whereas like you're a bigger operation, you need revenue coming in, and it might be beneficial for you to kind of, as a leader, deal with a headache to pay your people, you know? Whereas like with me, I'm smaller and I can be like, well, yeah, you know, we don't need to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just zeros, right? What's $2 million for me would be $20,000 for you, or whatever that number is. Mm-hmm. And you still have to make a decision. It's not, the impact isn't as big, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. But it's relative.
It's relative.
Yeah.
But
I didn't know if that, I may be just assuming that wrong. I figured, I don't know if that factored into it. Like, well, like, do you take jobs that are, you're like, well, I kind of don't want to do this, but we need to?
For sure. I mean, you know, you're always trying to balance that workflow and what's coming in. And one of the challenges of doing, you know, jobs where your average size is $4 to $5 million is finding clients that want to do $4 to $5 million projects, mm-hmm. which goes back to
pool.
Yeah, it's a smaller pool. And so it goes back to my earlier conversation that I want to execute and take care of clients so well that they turn their friends on to us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, word of mouth becomes really, really important in our world, as yes. opposed, you can't really advertise for the kind of jobs that we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be, yeah. you have to have a name and a reputation in the field to be able to do that, which,
you're thinking of like some YouTube ad, you know? Yeah. Like,
hi, I'm Brent Hull. I'm here.
Do you have a $4 or $5 million project that you'd like us to tackle?
It's a guy eating chips off his chest in his basement.
Yeah.
Just uh-huh. watching your
I
ad.
I could really use one of those.
You looking to spend $20,000 on a door? Come on over. I just used an absurd number. I know that's not. I know it's 60. No, there's,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just dealing with clients, and I think one of the other things we were going to talk about is losing the client, and that client that I was describing is someone we lost in the past, where mm-hmm. we had them for a while, we were their person. They'd see you on the road, they'd honk and say hi, and they wanted to tell their friends about you
on the road.
And then from them, you know, hiring a hitman to take you out.
What's the biggest, like, what's the catalyst? What switches that over? You know what I mean? Because
there's
a big turn
with both the clients I can think of. There's a hyper expectation of, you know, speed, quality, price. And price isn't as high as speed and quality, mm-hmm. that they expect it, that there to be no downtime, and they expect the work to be excellent, and they expect, you know, they have high expectations. And so, you know, neither one of those jobs that we screwed up or got where we lost the client, did we explain very well what their expectations to be. Mm-hmm. And partly because we didn't see it coming, partly mm-hmm. because it looked like a pretty, you know, average small job, not average small, but average job that kept growing and growing and growing. And then as it kept growing, you're realizing, boy, they have high expectations too.
So a lot of the times it's like, hey, we need you to redo our bathroom. And then they're like, well, we really could redo the wainscot in the bathroom. So if we're going to do the wainscot in the bathroom, we might as well do the whole bottom floor. All right. If we're going to do that.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. this house ended up being, you know, we just want to do a little remodeling. We just want to get it up to, well, let's just go ahead and tear that out and do it. Let's just go ahead and tear that out and do it. Let's gut everything.
And so at every step of the way, are you guys saying, all right, so if we do this, I don't know how those conversations go.
No, it's something that we're trying to implement now, where every quarter, okay, possibly every month, but definitely by every quarter, there is a review of schedule and budget
with the client
saying, look, cool. Based on what we're doing now, this is the schedule's now pushed out this far, and the budget's now this, you know, just to give you an idea of where we're going. Yeah. And so we didn't do a good job of that. With that particular client, we did, and this was probably 8 years ago, so it's been a long time, but there was a, hey, you know, we're spending a lot more now. This is not what we talked about. Yes, I understand. Yeah, I don't worry. I got it. I know where we're going. Mm-hmm. But no, there wasn't the quarterly, monthly update. Just so you know, this because of X, Y, and Z that you changed in the last month, mm-hmm. we've now pushed the schedule back 2 months.
Does the majority of it happen because they change things?
I would say, yeah.
Oh, or the designer changes 100%. Things.
Because if you're
what's the designer's role?
The designer is like, I guess they play different roles, but on some of the jobs I've been on, they've been like, here's what we want the room to look like. And they actually have like drawings and they have like literally like a Pinterest picture or something. Yeah. And they say like, I want it, or Instagram, whatever. Yeah. I want it to look like this.
Yeah.
And we've literally like built stuff that's been like $5,000 and they're like, change it, tear it apart. And it's like, it just took us a week to build that.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, it doesn't make no difference, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel good about... I see it as kind of the designer wasting the client's money in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. Because it's like, they're not paying for it.
Right.
The client is paying for it. It's like, oh, we built this sample that's $5,000 and we're not going that route.
Right.
And to me, that's mind-blowing. But like you said, it's relative. $5,000 to them is maybe like $5. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still... It's the point, I guess, is... If you're making all these, if you want me done by like the end of May and then you throw me like 5 curveballs, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like I just spent a week doing this thing that you just changed.
Mm-hmm.
How can you expect me?
But I don't think people remember the changes that they,
that they've called out.
And it's our job to explain to them, look, you want us to change, move that door over 2 feet. Realize what's involved with that and realize you just pushed the schedule 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. All the moldings and stuff.
Not what we have been good at. Okay. Now, part of the reason why is because a lot of our clients don't care,
mm-hmm.
right? They want it right. And so, mm-hmm. okay, you know, there's not a budget on this project, or, you know, it's cost plus. I realize it's cost plus. I realize I'm costing myself money. You know, move it over. You know, that's not going to work. That's not going to line up. And so you do that enough times, you don't get in the habit of saying, no, you realize you just cost us three, because they're will you quit telling me that? I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I know.
Yeah. Don't tell me how to spend my money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's a balance you're trying to strike, where you're trying to be respectful, but you're also, you know what you're doing, right? You know, can you really say that to a self-made multimillionaire? Mm-hmm. You know what you're doing? You know, then he might look like you're talking down to him.
I totally, you have way more experience in that, even the conversations with those people than me. I have very little, but I feel like maybe one of those problems could be solved if the project manager just was forced to tell them, like,
well, and that's why we're doing a quarterly thing where we're just like, I know we're all adults here, but just so we're communicating clearly.
Brent's just making me do this.
Yeah.
It's a standard for every one of our projects. Yeah. We have to do it, but it's just
wanted
it's
to let practice. You know kind of where we're heading, how the jobs impact.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be super beneficial. And then it's documented. And maybe even like a change order documentation journal or something, where it's like,
it's got to be written down somewhere, you know, because we don't get it like we used to get it. We used to get it from clients. We're like, what do you mean? You know, how could we be here? And then you show them all the change orders and you're like, yeah, but I didn't know that this, you know. And so I used to get that a lot. I don't get that much anymore. But, mm-hmm. You know, the client who.
Why do you think that is?
Different client.
Yeah, I think maybe we're doing a better job prepping them for what the budget will be, and we're staying closer to that budget.
Mm-hmm. The longer you do it, the more you get systems and processes in place to go, this is a bad idea if we do it. Or,
well, I mean, we had a job, one of the jobs, I won't say which one because she probably doesn't want to know what people spent, but the, you know, it was a $500,000 rough estimate before we started, but by the time we had the plans and everything else figured out, it was $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. And so we went back to her before we started, say, we're really at this area. And in the past, I don't think, you know, the the 10 years in business Brent Hull or the 15 years in business Brent Hull
would have gone back.
Would not have gone back. Would right. have just said, it just started spending money and doing the work. And then, you know, $800 or $1 million. She's like, well, it's kind of costing a lot more.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, can you do an accounting? Sure. And then you do an accounting. You go, I think we're going to be at $1.5 million. And she's like, that's never was communicated.
Yeah. Versus now she's more comfortable with it.
Versus now you go, I think it's good. I do an initial estimate of $500,000. This is what I think it's going to cost. We do the plans. We get everybody out there. We bid it. We go back to them and say, this is what it's actually going to cost based on the bids, based on the plans, based on what we're doing. And the old Brent Hull would have just been, yeah, let's go. You know, and instead of carefully doing that pre-construction stuff.
Yeah. So I feel like it's all communication.
It's all communication.
To lose the client is a big communication.
Well, in another recent job where we lost a client, and these are the, I don't think I want to imply that we lose clients all the time.
It happens every day.
About every one in every 4 or 5 years, we'll you know, trip up or do something. Or I should say, it's been 4 or 5 years since we tripped up and did something.
It's been 4 or 5 years since the last incident.
I mean, yeah. It's going to happen. I mean,
well, and what happened here is we did the budget, we did the schedule, the client didn't seem to care about the budget. The schedule was important. We established a date. They added a ton of stuff to that scope of work. We never re-communicated what the new change date of, not understanding how important that date was. Mm-hmm. And then every day that went past that date, they just kept getting madder and madder. Now, my project manager didn't do a good job of communicating that. And in a lackadaisical way, kind of said, yeah, we're working on that. Yeah, a few more weeks and we'll have, instead of stop, no, what's happened, give an accounting, give it a, you know, look, this is where we are, establish a new date, you know, and they just kept getting more and more frustrated with him and us. And, you know, we lost the client.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrating and disappointing for me, especially when my, you know, the goal in the path is to try to get every client so happy that they're telling their friends about it. You know, they're not telling their friends about, which is frustrating.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
And then, like, examining that one, do you think that, I guess, the only thing that would change it is just to be communicative through the process? Like, or, because I feel like some people are just not going to be happy. It's like the typical Karen, you know, like, what do you do with her?
Yeah, this client was gone a lot. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, monthly meetings with them. They were, you know, they'd shipped out and they were gone for, you know, 4 months before we saw them again. And so it wasn't like we had, gosh, we've had delays. Gosh, this is the schedule. This, you know.
Yeah.
And so we have Builder Trend, and that schedule was in Builder Trend, but they don't really look at that. And so,
what's Builder Trend? Is that like a software to help manage?
Yeah, it's a client. You know, what are they called?
Portal.
Yeah, and they basically can see the schedule and see the budget and see everything. It's an open book effort to try to share information about the job. We do daily logs. We take pictures of things that they can log in,
so,
and see
really
what kind of work.
There's no excuse then for them, like.
I you know, we don't know exactly what it was. They could just be a difficult client, right? It could be more them than us, but I'd always look at it like, what could we have done different? How could we have improved?
In an effort to improve, you ask, how can I be better?
You can't change
them.
And so they're, you know, I just look at our team and I go, we didn't do a very good job of communicating those changes, and that original schedule date that we established never moved, even though the scope of work increased
tenfold.
You know, I guess I also, in 30 years of doing this, think that, you know, what's that saying that that people are more likely to complain than they are about to praise about a job.
Yeah.
And so they're much, you know, the groan that, you know, most clients do about contractors, it always costs more. It always takes longer. You know, they love to gripe about that. And very few of them, you know, will praise. One in 10 will praise you versus the 10 that'll criticize you. So, you're really trying to play a perfect game, and so it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the bad news. Bad news gets around the world before good news gets its shoes on. I heard a guy say that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's like, funny. It's pretty accurate. The communication trend seems huge in terms of keeping clients. And in terms of firing your own clients, that's a funny way of phrasing that. I just read a book recently by a guy named Patrick Lencioni. It's called The Six Types of Working Genius. I would highly recommend it. I think it's really good. But one of the points that they're making in that book is if you're brutally honest with the people who you're hiring specifically, so signing on a client or whatever, if you're very upfront about exactly what you want, they're less likely to say yes. They're more likely to say no. But also, if they do say yes, they'll say yes and they'll be excited about the yes because it's like, well, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I have no,
mm-hmm.
Misunderstood expectations about any of this stuff. I'm feeling solid about this. So that's always interesting.
Yeah, it's like those pharmaceutical commercials where it's like, could lead to blah, 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 all these like exactly. symptoms. And they're like, well, they did tell me. So yeah. I mean, I guess I'll take it.
Exactly. Helps with headaches. Done. All right.
We didn't really, I don't feel like we talked about the firing the client. We talked about the bad client, talked about saying no to clients. It's when you're in the job, you started thing. Have you ever taken their money and then said, you know what, this isn't working. Here's your money back.
I haven't.
Yeah.
I haven't been in that situation. I had, the closest thing I can think of to that is some guy was like real angry with us one day, a homeowner. It's like a homeowner job. And he was getting really, he just seemed hostile and for no reason. It was just like, sometimes people are just in a bad mood and he was just kind of being real jerky with us and kind of treating us like beneath him. And I was like, I'm really non-confrontational, I'm not going to like get in your face or anything. I was like, hey, I think we're going to go. I think we're just going to, he's like, what do you mean you're going to go? I was like, you seem like you hate us. Like, I kind of just don't want to be here. And that actually like snapped him out of it. And he was like, oh, no, I'm sorry. Like, I apologize. Like, I'm not nothing. I think I'm just having problems. He said something like that, like personal issues. I was like, I mean, we'll stay and do it, but I just don't want to be disrespected. And he was like, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, please, like, could you please stay and do it? So we did. That's the closest thing I can think to. But I've never taken anyone's money and given it back or not followed through after taking a deposit.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I've been lucky in that sense. Of course, you're looking at my jobs versus yours are like way more, less moving parts
in
what I'm doing, versus someone who's building homes from the ground up.
Yeah.
There's so much moving there. So what about you? You've ever just been like,
I've never, given their money back. I think that,
you just keep it.
typically, so our pre-construction, by the time they're ready to sign a contract, you've met with them four or five times. You've seen, them, you've interacted with them on a number of different levels about budget, about potential schedule, about different stuff. So, if you don't see the red flags by then, you're not looking for it or they're psychotic, right? And they've totally totally hidden all that.
Or they're not the problem.
Right? Is that a good point? And so the,
implying you would be the problem. That's
impossible.
No, well, not you. I'm just saying, like,
the, no. It's the royal you. I think it's right. Yes. I mean, the you're not.
It could be you.
Yeah, it's you're not being realistic and maybe about who you are, what you're doing, and stuff like that. So I've never had to give money back because, but I'm just thinking.
Is that common? Like, what would that look like if you had to give money back? would it look like if you're like getting disrespected in a job and you're like, here, just take the money back, I'm out?
I've given money back like that, just say, this isn't worth it, I'm just going to send you your money back. But it's always been small deposits and things like that.
But if you've already invested your time, like, I could see why you wouldn't give it back in some cases.
Right, because technically that's the point of a deposit, right?
What you would say is you give an accounting, hey, I'm going to just subtract the, like on the consulting side, I had a guy want to hire us for designing a new house, and Christy got involved, my designer and modeler. She did a bunch of work, and then after we went through the first round of stuff, we basically helped him see, you know, the kind of house that he wanted and kind of helped develop some stuff. And then he reached back out and said, hey, I want my money, you know, I need my money back because we're going to go in a different direction. And I said, well, I'm going to have to do, I'm going to have to go through here and I'll figure out what my costs are. And I'm going to take those out and I can send you a refund.
What did he say to that?
He's like, well, what was happening? It was a non-refundable refund.
Yeah.
And I said, this is non-refundable. We spent a lot of time. We helped you figure this stuff out. And, you know, he wanted a full accounting. He goes, look, I'm a consultant. I understand you got to cover your costs, but we ended up going back three or four times. I finally sent him some money, even though contractually I didn't have to.
Yeah.
I did end up sending him, you know, a portion of that money that we hadn't spent back. But it wasn't going to be a good job with him anyway, right? Yeah. We didn't want to keep working.
I'm also just thinking, like, in general, obviously you want to do damage control if he's going to go bad mouth, but also it's a scummy move if you're asking for a non-refundable deposit back and whatever. And so we deal with this a lot in K-Life because we're dealing with kids. And so we have like a non-refundable deposit to go on our mission trip or go on our mystery trip or something like that. And we've had kids, you know, say, I can't afford for the whole $500 for the trip. I need the $100 deposit back. And we're like, well, you know, this was a non-refundable deposit to save your spot. And they're like, okay. Well, I gotta talk to my mom about that. Then we get a call from the mom. We never knew that this was happening. We never knew. And we're like, all right, well, we'll just give you the money back, but also, like, just know this was a non-refundable deposit in the future.
Yeah, have
you
some
know?
Responsibility. I can't imagine asking for a non-refundable thing back. Like, yeah. I couldn't do it. I couldn't either. I'd feel horrible.
Yeah. And it's rare. It's few and far between, but it is an awkward conversation.
Yeah, especially with children. Like,
I get that your kid did this on their own and you didn't really have any say in it, but also, like, you know, recognize that we booked tickets and we've, you know, prepped for your kid to...
Plus, you're showing them some Christ-like things in that.
I think the other thing that happens with clients and sitting here thinking through, you know, why we haven't had that many bad clients is I think after a period of time, okay, if you're attracting, and this is a theory, so you tell me if this rings true or not, but if you're continuing to attract bad clients, it's more likely you than it is your client. And I say that because... You know, we've developed a reputation over time and for the quality of work that we do. And because people see the quality and the expense, we don't have tire kickers calling us. We have only people that are serious and want to pursue that. So this is maybe advice to guys out there that as you build your business, realize the kind of people are calling you, you've attracted them in some way. You've attracted... someone who is, for us, it's a command. The worst side of it is that it's a very demanding client, you know. But for someone else, if they continue to have someone that's kicking their tires about cost, if someone's saying, you know, those things, that's because you've set yourself up as a low cost provider, and you're going to therefore fight those battles as a low cost provider, you know, that I'm not going to fight, right? I'm going to fight different battles. Mm-hmm. And so, your personality and your business style is going to naturally attract clients.
It's the Walmart, like, always low prices. And yeah, then it's like some lady at customer service arguing.
100%. And if you go to Neiman Marcus or something like that, maybe it's a different argument, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other side, like, maybe you're not attracting bad clients, but maybe you are a bad employee. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
Like a bad contractor?
Well, if you're terrible at communicating and people are always coming to you, they're complaining and they're upset with you, it's not like you've just hired a bunch of bad clients. You've just been a poor communicator your clients.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just like...
Well, I'm saying it's both and, right? Because what you're saying is if you set yourself with low prices, people are always going to come and say, well, how low really is it? And
I think I was saying what your second thing is that... it's just probably a good indicator of the things that, you know, your strengths and weaknesses. You know what I'm saying? This is, like you just said, it could be you're just a bad communicator and you're having bad communication problems.
Right.
And so look at yourself.
Right.
Don't necessarily look at, I've always had the worst, they don't understand anything I'm saying. Well, it could be.
Yeah. If you have two or three in a row, I think it's a pretty good indicator that, you know, maybe you are the problem. But also, if you've got a litany of great clients and great experiences and you even got a relationship where you can call some of those clients and go, hey, I just had a weird experience. And I'm not trying to throw the other client on the bus, but I'm just curious, you know, was your experience with me okay, or was I an idiot at any point? You know what I mean?
That's a really good thing you could do.
Brittany wants to do that for us.
It'd be a great deal.
Does it scare you? Yes, absolutely. It scares me.
But that shouldn't scare you. You should like embrace that head on. Because they're going to tell you directly. I had
a client.
If you get any bad reviews, or if you think you've got good reviews, but then you figure out that they're bad.
Well, what happens with us, too, is that initial pain and suffering, the high cost and the time that goes into it, I know the first year or two they're going to be disgruntled because they spent a lot of money and
they're not seeing anything.
Or my shower handle still doesn't, I don't get hot water as fast as I should. They're just frustrated with the whole process. But I saw an old client did their house 5 years ago, and they're huge fans now, right? Well, they weren't huge fans 2 years ago. They're huge fans now.
What switched?
They... over time, see the quality, see how we stood behind it, have so many nice comments from people that come over. They love their house.
And probably friends who say, I just had the worst experience with...
Maybe.
My house is falling apart.
Maybe.
You know what's
crazy about that? Yeah. Like, I've talked to thousands of homeowners, and like, I've never met one who's happy with the builder.
Huh.
Not one. And this is like more production style stuff, so still. Of course, but... It's pretty crazy.
But that's why the survey scares me, because it's just that...
It should be on a time delay.
It should be on a time delay.
Set a timer for 3 years.
I mean, honestly, it's not wise to ask... You know, we don't ask our Super K kids. We do surveys every year. Every year we do follow up with kids. We do follow up with parents. We never ask our Super K kids, what do you think of K-Life? Because they're never going to have a good... Because what we do with them is pure fun. We just like have all... But then in high school, we're like talking to kids who going out getting drunk. And we're like, hey, you're doing this. This is harmful to you. I think you should tell your parents and find some accountability in that. And they're like, I don't want to do it. And then you're like, well, you've got a week. And then at the end of a week, I'm going to go talk to your parents about it. But it's because I love you. It's because I care for you. And every time, all those kids come back and they go, hey, man, that changed my life. That was one of the best things you could have done for me. It was like...
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
But, I mean, there's obviously some who are still just like...
Can't believe you did that, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Threw me under the bus.
But also, like, their parents want their best for them as well. So we're not like
going
to... Their
parents probably know they're drinking anyway.
100%. There's not been a single time where we've called a parent like, well, it's been rare that we've had to tell them, but that it's been even rarer that we've had a conversation with them afterwards and the parents aren't like, yeah, we knew it was happening, but thank you for getting them to, you know, it's enabled us to have a conversation about it. It's enabled us to, you know, whatever. Anyway, all that to say, even the ones who seem the most pissed are actually happy in that. But anyway.
Well, it's just, I think... Yeah. Anyway, just when you do that and how you do that, it just makes me anxious. It's just what are they going to say?
For sure.
You know? Well, it's like getting, when they roast you, you know?
Yeah.
Like sitting up there in front of everyone.
For sure. I mean, I think that we do.
You should invite them together for a banquet.
Oh,
you
all sit the on clients. A chair. Oh, man. All the subs, too.
Where's that plumbing guy? You. This guy.
Yeah. So they're sinking lower in my chair.
Yeah, you're actually getting anxious about it.
It does make me anxious. Yeah.
It should. I think it should.
But I mean, if I
want real feedback, I get it. Should make you anxious.
Yeah.
Because that first 2 years we did our K-Life survey, I was like, we shouldn't. Why are we taking it? Because I knew we were bad communicators to parents. And
you knew what they were going
to
say.
Yeah. Nally and Kristen came on board and they were like, we've got to do a better job communicating to parents. We've got, like, this is abysmal. And I was like, yeah, I know.
That's what I was trying to tell them.
It's me running it. Of course it's abysmal. So anyway, then they came on and that, you know, we have flyers, we have handouts, we have all this, we have emails going out, right, all that stuff. And so anyway, it was just, that's I think the point is
you're never going to make everyone happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we are trying our hardest every day, right? We're trying to do what's best. We're trying to make good decisions. We're trying to do those things. And so that is the piece that makes me go, we did our best.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to rip anybody off. I'm not trying to, we're trying to do our best. It's just a hard process.
You can especially say that given that there is an industry that you work in that is not trying to, or is best. Trying to rip people off. It's not trying to do
that.
Yeah,
no, that's
like,
true.
There are people out there who don't care. They're like, well, I'm making money at the end of the day. And
yeah.
So,
yeah.
True.
Anyway. All right. Well, that is everything. Thanks for watching this episode of Passion for Craft Podcast. We will see you next time.